Okay, so tonight I'm going to talk about Zazen and try to go into detail how we approach this process. What specifically do we do? What are the important steps in order to keep going deeper and not stop anywhere? So I think what I can do, I'll start out by reading you something from Tang Dynasty Zen Master. And this is actually his summary of the key steps in this process. So this master, his name is Rinzai. And Rinzai lived during the Tang Dynasty, which was a period of time in China. It was the flowering of Zen. It was a time of a great number of very profound masters, and where the school of Zen really blossomed and spread and developed many schools and lineages, only a couple of which really have survived down to now. These two main lineages that are still in existence in the world, both in Japan, maybe not so much China anymore, but definitely in the West, are the Soto lineage and the Rinzai lineage. So Rinzai was the, if not the founder, the key figure in this lineage that brought us koan practice and this deep inquiry practice and a very vigorous, intense, penetrating style of Zazen, the aim of which is to break through into awakening, which has been called Kensho, enlightenment, Satori, there's many names for it. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that as well if we have time. So Rinzai had four categories. He's probably most famous for these categories. And I'm going to go into at least hopefully three of them, maybe the fourth one as well. So I'll read you the categories. So category one, and the translation here is man, but you can think of it in terms of man in the generic, not the gender. So a person. So the first one is man is deprived, circumstances are not deprived. The second one is circumstances are deprived, man is not deprived. The third one is both man and circumstances are deprived. And the fourth one is neither man nor circumstances are deprived. So another way this has been translated is sometimes I take away the person and leave the circumstances. This is Rinzai speaking. And he would say, sometimes I take away the circumstances and leave the man. Sometimes I take away both the circumstances and the man, and sometimes I take away neither. So these are those categories. Now, just to be clear, you can think of this as how Rinzai taught, a systematic approach to teaching various students at the stage that they're in, or to have a certain approach to a particular student who's stuck in a particular way, or to push them forward in a particular way. But I think even more correctly, this is how Rinzai did Zazen. And I'm going to try to explain this tonight. So this first step of men is deprived, circumstances are not deprived, or how he put it, sometimes I take away the man and leave the circumstances. So this is actually what is classically taught in Zazen, starting with counting the breath and then moving on to following the breath, and then even on to Shikantaza, and then the early stages of working on a breakthrough koan such as Mu. And essentially what this is taking the mind, which is, before we have encountered this practice, for most of us is very scattered, is very multitasked, spread everywhere, frenetically going through activities in the world, and at the same time elaborating all sorts of ideas and running commentaries, and also just discursive thoughts that have nothing to do with what we're doing. You might call it daydreaming, some of it conscious and some of it unconscious. and all of which causes a great sense of dissipation, frustration, oftentimes depression, anxiety, struggle, strife. And so we often will come to this particular practice because we are so frustrated with this ordinary way of the mind operating, which is partly what we do with the mind, and partly it just runs on its own. Our mind is kind of on autopilot. So we come to this practice, and the teacher will initially teach the student how to sit. And posture is very, very important, because a key to this initial stage of man is deprived, circumstances are not deprived, is to develop attentiveness. And to have this attentiveness, you have to have a posture that supports the attentiveness. The posture is the framework. So we describe a taut posture, which is something with a straight back, some strength in the lower back pushed forward slightly, and the chin pulled in. Now, one of the most common defects in Zazen postures that I see, particularly during Sesshin when I walk around with a keisaku stick, I notice people's postures, and the most common defect I see is the chin going up, rising up. And when that happens, it's much more likely that the focus is not down here in the hara, in the tanden, but sort of floating up into the head, and thinking is happening. So sometimes I'll put the stick down and correct someone's posture by pushing forward on the small of their back, pulling back on their chin, getting them much more centered, almost like a pole stuck in the ground, but not tense, just taut, really tuned. It takes a while for you to learn what that feels like and how it feels for your body. It's a kind of muscle memory. Now, all of us here know the posture already. I won't go into any detail on it, only to say that in this first step and all the subsequent steps, this is really critical. Now, the next thing the teacher will do from the next step after teaching just the physical aspect of sitting in Zazen is what you do with the mind. And the first thing that is taught is to focus on something, be it the count, be it the breath. Even as we move forward, it would be shikantaza, which is the actual experience of the room and your body and your mind, this flowing experience without stopping anywhere. But in all of these cases, there is focus on something taking form, taking a particular form, be it the actual count, the actual sensation of breathing, the experience of the unfolding of the karmic processes in the present moment called shikantaza, or if you're working with a koan like mu, it's the way we teach it, just mu, only mu, only mu. And the student will start out focusing on this just like you would focus on the breath. It would be a silent mu, 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 like this. So this is that first step of man is deprived, circumstances are not deprived. Now, what does it mean that man is deprived in this step? The man that's talked about here is the subject standing apart, elaborating ideas and concepts, etc. These ideas and concepts get so strongly attached to the world that we don't understand that we've added them. We don't see that. So Zazen enables us to focus on the raw experience of the forms as they unfold. And as we do this, and as our focus improves and our joriki develops, which is that power in the hara area, if your posture is proper and you're putting your mind's eye in that area, what happens is the thoughts start to quiet down. And they start to fall away from your actual experience of the form on which you are focusing. So that the breath becomes just very purely the breath, where the count is just one, two. Now thoughts float up, but we just let them pass. We don't fight them, because then we get caught up in them. One thought leads to another, leads to another. And we make some effort to focus on the object So this is the circumstances not deprived. We are actually making an effort to focus and concentrate on the object, to shift our attention to that and away from the running commentary, all the reactions, all the judgments, all the rights and wrongs and goods and bads that the mind has so habitually not only elaborated but applied to an innocent world of form for our entire lives, because we have been taught to operate that way. And it works for us in the so-called outside world. But when we come into the Zendo, we are doing a very different thing. We're following these steps of Rinzai because we want to clearly see what the truth is, not just what we think it is. So this is the step of man is deprived. Now, another very important step here, and a way of depriving this man, in other words, the subject elaborating ideas, is to develop what could be called dispassion. So not only are we observing the unfolding of circumstances, and memories come into the mind, and various other forms come into the mind, but we can do certain things to drop our elaboration of reactions by clearly getting it that by the time any form has entered the mind, it has happened. Now, one way you can think of it is that before we are aware of anything, it could become anything. It could be anywhere. There's a cloud of probability. It's most likely going to be this, but it could be that. We don't know. The minute you observe anything in your zazen, it is done. The cloud of probability has collapsed into that exact experience. Another way to think of it is that by the time we are aware of anything, all of the karmic factors, all of the causes and conditions that led to the particular configuration of form in that moment are completed. They are done. Sometimes I use the analogy that because light has a fixed speed in the universe, it's 186,000 miles per second, or is it per hour? I don't know. I have an astronomer here. I think it's 186,000 miles per second. But if I'm incorrect about that, it's per hour. But in any case, what this means is that the light from the sun that we see in this moment was released from the sun 8 minutes and 20 seconds earlier. So if you want to think about a karmic circumstance, just as a thought experiment, imagine the sun suddenly going out. By the time we on Earth noticed the sun went out, that happened 8 minutes and 20 seconds before in the sun's location. So in a sense, it's done. It's a done deal. So we can take this awareness and apply it to the world in which we are experiencing. This actual world in our zazen of unfolding thoughts, reactions, sensations, smells, sounds, laughter, distractions, whatever it might be, whatever form comes up in the circumstances of your zazen, we can immediately see that it's happened. Therefore, I don't have to do anything about it. It's irrelevant because it's done. It's irrelevant to this process. But there it is. It's there. So we begin to shift our awareness as a result of this dispassionate approach and the falling away of all the judgments and thoughts that are reactions to a world that we think we should be contending with and that we're not clearly seeing moment by moment as a completed event, karmically bound. So now that we have this focus and this intensity in our zazen, we're able to see these circumstances and let the reactions drop away. We now begin to shift. This is the next step in zazen. The shift happens quite organically, but we can also take a step in that direction. So this now is the transition from this circumstances are allowed while man is deprived to man is allowed and circumstances are deprived. Now let me explain this to you. There's a shift going on here. When we no longer are contending with the forms, reacting to the forms, thinking about the forms and making judgments about the forms, be it the count, the breath, how I'm doing in my zazen, how long the sitting is taking, whatever it might be, whatever reactions arise, we can begin to notice that these forms are present. They are there. They have presence. In a sense, they are. They possess something called being. This is the beginning of noticing something that has no particular form, no particular color, no particular sound, no particular smell. And yet, there it is. It's embedded in the sounds, smells, thoughts, sensations of the moment-to-moment unfolding of circumstances in our attentive zazen. We begin to notice this. So the next step would be to enter that, see that, and just let go of the particularities of the form. Now, as I say, this often happens organically. This is the beginning of entering a state of what one might call dhyana or samadhi. So dhyana is the very root, the Sanskrit word that is the root of the word zen. It means absorption. How does this absorption happen? What is the process by which this absorption happens? Partly it's organic because of the intense focus, the joriki, the narrowing down of one's focus to just this one thing, be it mu or the actuality of the breath moment by moment by moment. As we enter that very intensely, we begin to see something very silent, without particular form, color, sound, smell, that is intently aware. So this is, I would call it the opposite of sleep. Some people compare this state to deep sleep. But deep sleep, we're not conscious. This, we never lose any awareness. We are constantly aware, continually aware in a flowing way. So this is the beginning of this next step in zazen. And I encourage you at times when you're very focused, not before you've really mastered in this particular sitting. I'm not talking in general. I'm saying this sitting, not until you've mastered the focus on the circumstances and dropped away the reactions and developed a dispassionate awareness of this exact experience of unfolding form. When you can do that, then you can begin to notice something. Notice that whatever it is you're focusing on is. What is that? Is that? Now you're beginning to do what I've described for many students, which is often puzzling and frustrating. Something called turning the light of the mind in on itself. Now this is not easy to find in Zen literature. Most books on Zen stop at this first step of focusing on an object, on circumstances are allowed and man is deprived. But this is a very important next step, and it's often shared personally between the teacher and student when the student's ready. But I'll share it with you what this is. So you begin to notice the presence of the form. And as you notice the presence of the form, the actual awareness of the particularities of the form start to dissolve as you enter more and more into its presence. Now, what is its presence? You begin to notice that nothing can possibly be without being in my awareness. If it's present outside my awareness, that's just an idea of it. It may be quite valid. It's a useful model. I certainly hope that when I walk out of here, when this night is over, my car is parked on the street around the corner. It's still there now, I hope, but I really don't know. It could have been towed away. Could have been stolen. But the issue here in zazen is not so much the usefulness of something existing outside my awareness, but the actual experience. When you actually experience something having presence, what you mean is it has presence in my awareness. So the presence of this object of zazen and my awareness are not two separate things. They're actually one. I call it substance, with quotes around it. It's one substance. What is that substance? What is it? How would I find out? How would I discover exactly what that substance is? Now, if that substance is my awareness, and now we're talking about circumstances deprived, man not deprived. That awareness cannot possibly be other than the deepest part of me, myself. It cannot possibly be. Because if it was, it would be an object. It would become a circumstance. It would take a particular form. It would be back to this karmic world that's affected by all the causes and conditions in a web of cause and effect, where the probabilities collapse to this particular experience. And that would be then my thoughts, or some sensation of my body that I used to think was me. So just as we have developed dispassion about circumstances in the first step and understood that when these circumstances appear, they're done. Therefore, I don't need to react. Therefore, my thinking about them starts to drop off and I see them clearly. In the same way, in this next step, my ideas of what I am begin to drop away. My idea that I am a body, that I am a mind that has content, that I am the content of my mind, that I am a person with a history, that I have certain characteristics and qualities. Now, all those things are true, but that's not what's hearing this sound. The fact that there is a male that's 63 years old, that has certain history, certain reactions, certain personality, all of these things, that entity, which I can certainly think about and observe as a pattern, that entity is my object. How can my object be a subject? How can my object smell this incense? So I begin to ponder this. Now our Zazen is entering a new phase. It's entering a phase of what in Zen is called inquiry or doubt. Now, ordinarily that is brought to an intense boil in the practice of koan Zazen. But it's quite appropriate to do this at any point where your focus is excellent, where you have stripped off the words and the meanings and you've developed dispassion and you've begun to notice something about the breath, for example, that the breath is, and then noticing that it can't be outside my awareness. So its fact and my awareness are actually one substance. What is that substance? That's inquiry. We're beginning to, as I said before, turn the light of the mind in on itself. It is very, very important for every serious Zen student who wants not to stop anywhere, who wants to progress and go deeper, and really have this practice be a powerful healing force, to know how to do this, to learn how to do this in your own Zazen. You begin to look at this awareness. You could say, look at the being of the object. It's fine, you're doing the same thing. But looking at the sheer fact of the object, the particularities of its form start to drop away. They become unimportant. The circumstance is deprived now. The man is left. But not the ordinary man you thought you were, the person with a history and problems and personality, but the actual awareness, the pure awareness. Now, as I said before, the fact of an object has no particular form, color, sound, smell, taste, touch. Your awareness also has no particular form, color, sound, smell, taste, touch. The contents of your awareness do, but the awareness doesn't. Otherwise, it would be continually superimposed on the world. Whatever that content would be, whatever form that consciousness would have, would be superimposed on everything. But the mind is really more like a pure mirror. And in our Zazen, as we begin to really clarify this, the mirror's stickiness, dirtiness, dust, and haze that puts it out of focus starts to become very, very clean and very, very clear. So this process clarifies that awareness. Now, as we enter this more deeply, we enter a very, you might say, dark place. It's described in the Zen literature in various poetic ways. One of the ways it's described is the grand round mirror of wisdom is black as pitch. As we persist in this direction, turning the light of the mind in on itself, we can't see anything in particular. the forms that we were occupied with before begin to drop away. So this is the kind of, quote, darkness that I'm talking about. It's also described sometimes a blue, sometimes as a blue sky without clouds, just a blue sky. You look into a blue sky and all you see is vastness. There's a very vast sensation. So we enter this more and more deeply. We really go into this. We begin to notice something about the process of looking at the looking. Is that the only way to really clearly, clearly see it is to be it. Because anything you see is your object and cannot be this knower, cannot be this awareness. So we begin to enter it. Now, as we do this, we start to enter these deeper and deeper states of what's called dhyana. It's a very peaceful feeling in the body and mind. We feel very at home. We feel that nothing that we can possibly experience in our zazen, be it anything in the room, any experience of a thought, a feeling, a memory, nothing is outside of us. It all feels inside. It feels as if we are at home. Nothing can confront you in this state as you go deeper into this state. Now, when you really go all the way into this state, you begin to enter something called samadhi. Samadhi is a state of great absorption, wonderful clarity. When this state begins to arise, time seems to disappear. Time is known by your awareness of processes occurring, usually rhythmic processes, repeated processes. So there's some notion of how much time has passed because there's a sense interiorly that a certain rhythmic process has continued, and that means 5 minutes have gone by. But in this state of samadhi, time begins to disappear. So you can't tell how long you've been sitting. Sometimes if you set a timer or a bell, when it goes off and you find out that a half hour went by, you say, oh my God, where did the half hour go? You know you weren't asleep. You were intently aware, but there's no sensation of time passing. This is a wonderful, wonderful state. This is a state where we begin to enter this third condition of Rinzai. Circumstances and man are both deprived, are both taken away, so to speak. I think that's a nicer way to put it. So the awareness of myself as a subject standing apart and my awareness of any objective world of form drops away, and what is left is this state described in the first rank of Tozan, in the third watch of the night before the moon appears. In the third watch of the night before the moon appears. It's an intent awareness without any particularity. And it's a timeless state. And it's the very core of what you are. It's the very source of the universe. It's the source of everything we see. When we say, what is the substance of this reality? What is the substance of this being? This is the place. Now, no one can really describe it in any way that will give you a firm idea of what it is. It can only be known by you yourself. Some people describe this in the Zen literature. There's a wonderful statement in the Koan Mu in the commentary. It's like a person drinking water. Only this person knows for themselves whether it's hot or cold. It's that intimate. So the key here in this state, as we progress from circumstances are deprived, man is present, to both are let go of, both are dropped away, is this state of intense, deep, profound intimacy. There is no two. There's no other. Now, because there's no other, there's no me. There's no particularity to myself. It's just this one thing, this one source. I want to try to read you something that might describe it a little better than I am. So This is a description of something called this writer here. This is a Zen master. His name is Katsuki Sekida. He calls this Jishu Zamai, which literally translated is self-mastery samadhi. So he said, what is the difference between sleep and samadhi? And I'll spell samadhi for you. It's S-A-M-A-D-H-I. Samadhi never loses its wakefulness. Jishu Zamai is the expression that describes the quality of samadhi. Ji means self, shu means mastery, zamai is samadhi. So the term denotes the samadhi of self-mastery. Jishu Samai never loses its independence and freedom. It is spiritual power, and it contains within itself all sources of emotion and intellect. Notice he uses the term sources. It is not the intellect and the thoughts and the objects at this point. It is the very source. It's the very root substance of what we view as our objects. When you come out of absolute samadhi, you find yourself full of peace and serenity, equipped with strong mental power and dignity. You are intellectually alert and clear, emotionally pure and sensitive. You have the exalted condition of a great artist. You can appreciate music, art, and the beauties of nature with greatly increased understanding and delight. Therefore, it may be the sound of a stone striking a bamboo trunk, or the sight of blossoms, makes a vivid impression on your mind, as is related in so many descriptions of Kensho. So he says here, this impression is so overwhelming that, quote, the whole universe comes tumbling down, end of quote. So it's this state from which very often the experience of Kensho arises suddenly. Now what happens is, in this state, you are not aware that you are in this state. The awareness of it happens as you start to emerge from the state. Now, if you emerge from the state in a way where something in the environment becomes suddenly in your awareness, it can break open this state. So there's a fourth category that Rinzai uses. Neither man nor circumstances are deprived. All of a sudden, the world bursts into view from this state. And there is no difference between me and the world, between my mind and forms. They are seen as one substance, one thing. And that thing is me myself. This is called Kensho. Now, it can happen in an organic, somewhat slow fashion. It can be very abrupt and very overwhelming, with deep emotion being expressed. It's different for each person, different at different times. People often have many Kensho. Hakuin said, I've had some number of full enlightenments and countless, you know, I think he said, I've had 18, you know, full enlightenments and countless small enlightenments. So this is all part of the process of this practice. So this practice begins with stripping off all our attitudes and ideas and reactions from the innocent forms present in our mind during Zazen, and progresses to a noticing, because now we're dispassionate, we're not pulled around by the nose, we're not reacting to everything that we're being aware of, and our concentration is deepening and our joriki is strengthening. Now we begin to shift, the attention shifts to the presence, the knowing. And we go deeply into that place, finding out about it. There's a sense of inquiry, a sense of going into a dark place, a mysterious place, of not knowing. As Jizo, the teacher of the future Zen master Hogen said, not knowing is most intimate. So in this not knowing, a deeper and deeper intimacy occurs until it's just intimacy. It's just this. No color, sound, smell, taste, touch, as the Heart Sutra puts it. This is that samadhi state. And then at some time, when the time is ripe, you may find yourself bursting out of the samadhi into a clear awareness of everything, shining this. Now, oftentimes in my Teisho, and particularly during Sesshin, I will point out what is true about everything? What is the sameness of everything? We see the differences of things. We see that incense smell is different from the lights on the walls, is different from the sound of this person's voice speaking, is different from the feeling of my body on the cushion. But what's the same about all these things? What's shining? What's emanating? They call it the moon in Zen. This emanation of something from everything. This is what I'm talking about. This is embedded in reality. So then, we begin to notice that hearing is embedded in sound. Seeing is embedded in what is seen. There's no need for a subject. There's no need for someone standing apart. In Zen, that's called being deaf and blind. So this is that next state. So I think it's helpful to understand this process so that we don't stop anywhere. Now, to progress along this process, I do think it's important to work with a teacher to really get a personal guidance how to move forward and not get stuck. But it's not always possible to work directly with a teacher, and there will be states that arise in your Zazen that you will have to contend with yourself and move forward through. So these descriptions, although they can freeze into concepts, can be very, very helpful as maps, as guides for this unfamiliar territory. So I wanted to share that with you tonight as a very concrete, very useful description of this process, rather than keeping it overly poetic and therefore very difficult to understand in a way that you can use. So I think we'll end the Teisho there.